sea, land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Tuesday, and it is March 11th. You know what? I wonder what day I gave you yesterday, because on the top of my broadcast notepad here, I have Tuesday, March 11th. I don't know if I told you that yesterday or not, but if I did, of course you knew that I was wrong, and you have to forgive me, folks. That time, absolutely, it just. I'm a mess with time. Let me just put it that way. I'm going to begin here. We have a guest with us this evening. Going to begin with our spiritual message, which, as you know, if you're listening regularly, we're reading from excerpts or passages from the little book, The Journey with the Master, by Eva Bell Werber. And this one is titled, Some Shall You Help. This is our spiritual journey. This is the path, the journey, the spiritual journey she's talking about, folks, into spiritual consciousness. As you journey upward on your search to gain a consciousness of this higher way of life, which I desire for you, you will meet many who have in various degrees this knowledge. Some know, yet do they not put the teachings into practice. Others strive and long to know more, and try to keep the faith and do follow my footsteps to the best of their ability. Here you may stumble and fall into a temptation of which I wish to warn you, my beloved. As you meet these others, you will be anxious that they stand with you on that particular height of consciousness where your feet have carried you. But this may not be wise. They may be following another trail to the summit, and from their position, the view would appear to be a very different one. Where they are in consciousness may be an attainment for them, and you must know that the Master walks with them also. I know what each soul has need of to bring it to the summit, and will leave no struggling traveler alone on the path that leads to home, which is true union with the Father. So do not cause confusion by trying to make them view life from your station. Neither shall you condemn them because they walk a different path. I long for you to know and understand these things even as I understand them. Yet again, someone may come to you, and you will sense, without quite knowing why, the hunger of their heart. This soul is by your side on the path, yet their eyes are not as yet fully open to the beauties which lie about them. And neither are their ears attuned to the music of my spheres. Then do I speak to you, whom I love so dearly, and tell you that it is right and fitting for you to hold out your hand and say to them, let me help you to see and understand. With this weaker hand in yours, you shall go on in love together. Your own consciousness shall expand with every word of help given. You need not strive to seek out the one whom you are to help, for I, divine spirit of your soul, will make it plain to you. So journey on, beloved, singing your songs of praise, that all knowledge will be given to you, as well as strength and wisdom to help where I see fit. And that is beautiful. And ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening is Mr. Steve Martin. He was on. He reminded me, and I'm so sorry he had to remind me. He was a guest in June of 2003, and he has a couple of videos that he did on 911. And he is with us this evening because he had some information that he's been so eager to share that I had to give him this opportunity. And I don't understand all of it, but you and I will get it together tonight and understand what he is, what his information is. And so I would like you to welcome Mr. Steve Martin. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie.
Uh-huh. And would you give our listeners a bit of a background on yourself as far as your research and who you are and what gives you the, how would you say, the right to talk about what you're talking about, the awareness?
Well, I'm a 44-year-old father of four. I live in northern Maine. I've been a school teacher, a businessman for many years.
Don't talk too fast here because we have shortwave listeners.
Okay.
And if the reception isn't real good, if we're talking fast, they don't miss a couple of words, they miss sentences.
Okay, I'll try to speak more slowly then.
Thank you.
Yes, I've been a writer for the Barnes Review. Some of your listeners may be familiar with that. The sister publication is American Free Press, also known in the old days as the Spotlight publication. I first got involved in 9/11 on 9/11. I began taping 20 minutes after the first plane struck the first tower and taped probably for 6 days solid. I have over 100 hours of coverage of those events, and right away things began to bubble up that didn't make sense to me, so I just began to dig in deeper. And I have almost a master's degree in history, so I have some research skills, and I spent a lot of time on the Internet.
If you excuse me,
all over.
Yeah, excuse me for interrupting
sure.
here, but if you have a master's degree from the educational system here, you would have to be a master of research to find out the truth about history, wouldn't you, Steve?
Well, that's the reason I didn't finish my master's. I wasn't invited back because my views were politically incorrect. But that's a story
okay.
for another
okay, that's
another
cool.
day.
That's cool.
Yeah, some of your listeners may remember our show. It was actually, I think, March or April of 2002. So it's been,
what did I say?
Yeah, I think it's June of 2003. It's been three years since we've been together.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jackie. But I came out with two videos in early of 2002. In fact, I think mine were two of the earliest that hit the market with regard to the unanswered questions about 9/11.
Uh-huh.
My first one was titled Unanswered Questions. And unexplained coincidences and unanswered questions. And the second one was titled The Plot Thickens.
Now, Fred Ehrlich, you said, has the tapes, your tapes?
I believe he has. I haven't been on your website in a couple months anyway to check and see
well,
if he still carries them.
Yeah, well, if they were there, I'm sure. I don't think he drops too many tapes off of his list.
Well, I know that I sent out about 1,000 copies from here, so I'm sure there's plenty of them out and about, but
uh-huh.
I actually had some very unfortunate things happen here at the house shortly after the show we did last time, and I fled the country for that entire summer of 2002 and have basically been not involved in the 911 truth movement too much, keeping abreast of it, but not as active as I had been prior to the events here where my computer was ransacked and other things that went on.
Oh, my. Do you think this was because of your outspokenness on...
I have no doubt about that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's something you prefer not to talk about?
Yeah, I don't... I really want to get into... There's a couple of things that you and I talked about earlier
right.
today that are really hot and kind of forced me to at least come back on for this show. And I did probably 20 or different shows in early 2002 on all over the country. And the most important thing right now is that we be careful, I think, as folks who are interested in the truth on 9/11, that we be very accurate and careful with our information. And as you know, Jackie, there are many people on the other side who would love nothing more than to plant false information, disinformation, and have us pick it up and run with it and make ourselves foolish in the eyes of everyone.
May I ask you a question? I asked you this earlier today. I have not watched the film 911 in Plain Sight, but I understand that their big in this film, in this video, the big expose, so to speak, is a pod that was on a plane. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen that video, but I've of course heard those stories, and that's exactly what I'm referring to.
Okay,
Jack.
Are they saying then that it was the plane itself that blew up these buildings, or what?
You know, I really ignore that stuff because it really is something to me that immediately strikes me as being...
Well, that's getting a lot of play on the Internet.
That.
I've gotten a lot of emails about it, and I've also gotten people's impression of it. People who are in the know who say that it is leading people astray.
Yeah, and I would be on that side. I would say that that's one example of a story that's being put in to the 911 truth movement in order to discredit us. I think we need to continue to focus on the basic facts that steel structures don't collapse because of fires that burn cold and with black billowing smoke proving they're cold. We had, you know, of course, a situation in Madrid just very recently where a building burned at a much higher temperature for much longer, over 24 hours, and the steel building did not collapse.
Yeah.
We need to concentrate on those basic laws of physics that can be proven and leave these other theories out there that don't amount to anything, don't add anything to the basic story that we're being lied to by
but
the
maybe
government.
But maybe discredit those who are truly seeking and wanting the truth to be told about 911.
Precisely. The stakes here are incredibly high, as you well know.
Yeah, whoa.
And literally the entire future of the Western Hemisphere and the United States Sovereign Republic.
We might say the world.
Yeah, rests on whether or not we can get the truth
to enough people.
To enough people in time to make a difference. But the reason I contacted you last couple of days, Jackie, is two things. First of all, many of your listeners may have already heard something about... Are you there?
Yes.
I heard some...
I did,
there.
Too.
Well, the March edition of Popular Mechanics magazine has a cover story called Debunking 911 Lies. Conspiracy Theories Can't Stand Up to Hard Facts.
This is March of 2005?
Yes, the March 2005 edition of Popular Mechanics, which is a Hearst publication, and of course that should ring some alarm bells right away in some people's minds, because Hearst is known for being a lying organization all the way back to the Spanish-American War and the blowing up of the USS Maine.
Yes.
So, but and the thing that really caught my...
For when you said that, for our listeners who may not have heard it, folks, because, you know, that's something we remember from school, remember the Maine, and when they brought it up, they found out it was blown out from inside, folks. In other words, it was just another way to get the American people to say, okay, let's go to war.
Right. And that was the first time that they've done it. And, of course, they've done it over and over and over. And 9/11 is just the most recent incident of fomenting an incident to use to get the people to go along with war, which is not necessary.
Yeah, we might go back, all the way back to the American Revolution and start there.
Well, not with Hearst.
Not with Hearst, I know.
Right.
And I just am saying that to keep it in perspective, that as far as I have been able to ascertain, every single war, including the American Revolution, was promulgated by the same creatures that are promulgating war today. They are called the neocons, to be politically correct. Go ahead.
Well, what caught my eye at the end of the article, it lists the people who were involved in putting together this hatchet job on the 911 truth movement. And the first name is Benjamin Chertoff, spelled identically to the Michael Chertoff, who was just recently confirmed by the Senate to be our new head of the Department of Fatherland Security. And I think that was, you know, as soon as I saw that, I said, well, I need to find out if there's some relationship between the two.
He wrote a piece. Would you tell us just a little bit, because you had anxiety a bit about the piece that he wrote too.
Well, the piece itself is very weak in terms of refuting some of the major points that the 911 truth movement is making. They claim that they're disproving all of our facts without giving any facts themselves. It's all editorial comment, more or less.
Uh-huh.
And the Benjamin Chertoff, who is listed as the lead researcher for the article, I understand is quite a young man and didn't do his background checking and insulted a lot of people in the 911 truth movement, including Alex Jones, who we'll talk about in a minute, and others, and really did nothing to refute any of the major claims that have been made. And I'm not talking about, well, with the exception of the pod thing. I mean, they refute that well, and that's okay with me because I think it needs refuting. But there's just, it was very amateurish and very intended, I think, to begin the process whereby all major media in the country will gradually begin to demonize all of us, Jackie, who are opposed to the official line as to what happened on 9/11/2001, and in order to make us the terrorists, in order to excuse their eventual...
If you aren't with us, you are against us.
Precisely. And we all know that the people who pulled off 9/11 are not with the Republic. They are not Christian people, despite what they may tell you publicly to get elected. They're all, you know, the coteries are out there. The whether you want to call talk about Skull and Bones or the Bilderbergers, they're all tied in with these satanic organizations. So there's no question in my mind this was the opening shot in a propaganda war to try to bring all of us in the 911 truth movement down and possibly eventually even maybe imprison some of us.
And demonize us.
Right. So I began to do some calling around, and the first couple of folks I called were not able to help me any further. I did as much as I could on the Internet to try to determine if Benjamin Chertoff was related to Michael Chertoff. Well, to make a long story short, I finally got a hold of the good folks at the American Free Press, and I spoke to the editor there, Christopher Petherick, and Christopher put one of his reporters, one of their best reporters, Christopher Bolin, on the case, and he was able to find the mother of Benjamin Chertoff, and the mother told him on the phone last week that they are indeed cousins. So, of course, that raises a huge, huge red flag for all of us in the truth movement, and hopefully gives us an opportunity to prove to those who are still sitting on the fence with regard to 9/11 that there is an official cover-up underway at the highest levels of our government to discredit all of us and to just make the whole picture blurrier. Now, Benjamin Chertoff was then a guest on the Art Bell Show, which is the second largest radio show in the country after Rush Limbaugh, on Saturday night.
Benjamin Chertoff, the author of this?
And he had Benjamin Chertoff as his guest. That's correct. And Benjamin Chertoff was confronted with an open letter from AFP, American Free Press, written by Christopher Bolin, in which he asked him point blank if there was a relationship. And Art Bell was... who has, I think, gone over to the other side, if he was ever on our side to begin with.
One clue here. We know how controlled the media is, and we know that anybody who is really giving out the truth that matters, that could put a chink in their armor, is not going to be syndicated on three or 400 of the controlled media.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And for the most part, I would say that the majority of their guests are the same. I mean, they have hooks.
Absolutely.
They tell truth, and they have a big hook that will keep the biggest lies going.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, anyway, in the middle of their discussion on Saturday night between Benjamin Chertoff and Art Bell, Art did ask him if there was a relationship, and Ben admitted that they were distant cousins, was the adjective that he used. But, quote, I just found out that we were related. Okay. Now,
that flies, right?
Yeah. It's almost pathetically funny that he would even try to make that claim. But let's take it one step further. Now, Alex Jones was not aware of the show, and apparently Alex was getting all these hate comments from Benjamin Chertoff on the Art Bell Show that evening and saying, I guess... Alex said last night on his show that he didn't even know that his name was going to be brought up, but Benjamin was challenging Art the whole show to call in, and Alex could not get in and was not given the opportunity to respond. He did find out about it, I mean, it's halfway through the show and tried to call in and had no luck. But last night, Alex talked for the first half hour in his radio show about this being a first cousin to Michael Chertoff. Now, I don't know where Alex got that information, because it's hugely critical, the difference between a first cousin and a distant cousin. If we do eventually find out, and it's verified, that Benjamin Chertoff is the first cousin of Michael Chertoff, then I think it's very easy for us to at least make the claim that there's some serious nepotism here, and quite possibly the timing of the article that came out in the Popular Mechanics is also very suspicious, because it's the same week that Michael Chertoff was confirmed by the Senate to be our new Hermann Göring, if you will, number two man in this.
I think they love to shove those names in our face. Chertoff.
Yeah, exactly. Chertoff, a Russian Jew.
His
family has only been here a couple of generations, perhaps three.
The country today, the U.S. government, is under control of these people.
Well, the other thing about Michael Chertoff that most people may or may not know is that he was the source within the Department of Justice on 911 who came out within the next 24 hours with a list of 19 Arabs who were supposedly responsible for that attack.
You mean, what was his...
head of the criminal division of the Justice Department on 9/11, and he was involved in coming up with this official story about these 19 hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have an extreme Zionist Jew, and I just want to emphasize, I have nothing against Jewish people. I am not anti-Semitic.
Neither am I.
I'm anti-Zionist, because I think it's very destructive to peace in the Middle East. But you have someone of that ilk coming out and immediately claiming that Arabs are responsible and coming out with a list of names and pictures and the whole deal, which also did not ring true to me at the time, still doesn't. But it's the thing about Alex's show last night is Alex needs to come forward, because he also said that they had dinner together, Michael and Benjamin. And if how does he know that? If Alex has that information, he needs to share that with the rest of us in the 911 Truth Movement. Because if we're not careful, and it turns out this is a distant cousin, and that there's no relationship, then we've got a tempest in a teapot, and we've got another opportunity for the propagandists on the other side to give all of us a black eye.
Well, it could be by design.
I don't know, but I did call Alex Jones' show twice today. I called him early this morning, gave him all the information, told him I was going to be on the radio tonight, and told him to please get back to me if there's any more information as to how in the world he knows that they're first cousins, and I have heard nothing.
Uh-huh.
I did call Christopher Petherick back at AFP and confirmed with them that Christopher Boleyn got only that they were cousins from Benjamin's mother, without an adjective, first, second, distant, or otherwise. So we're still working on that story, and I wanted people to know the truth as it stands right at this moment is we have established a connection between the two gentlemen, but we have not established that they are first cousins to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But if and when we do, Jackie, I think the Lord will have given us an incredible opportunity to blow a bunch of holes in the official cover-up, and to prove that there is a concerted effort on the part of this administration to lie about what really happened on 9/11 and to use classic Hitlerian propaganda to destroy any honest efforts to get at the truth and to demonize anyone who has the willingness to speak out against all the falsehoods that we all know are out there with regard to 9/11.
Why do we call it Hitlerian propaganda?
Because everything that the Bush administration has done to this point in time with regard to Homeland Security, with regard to their reaction to 9/11, is classical Hitlerian methodology.
Well, it's what we've been told, and I have done a lot of research in that direction, and they weren't books that were published recently. They were books that were written a long time ago. They've been suppressed, and The blame, I want you to consider this, because we don't do bashing. I don't know all there is to know. I know that that's one of the biggest lies that we have ever been told in history. And it's in everybody's cells. So I used to do the same thing, refer to the U.S. as Nazi Germany instead of the Soviet Union.
Oh, there's no question the Soviet Union is much more.
Well,
I'm not stating a moral judgment about Hitlerian technique. I'm just saying that's the technique that's being used and has been proven successful in the past to squelch dissent and to grab power. So let's you know, I don't want to get sidetracked into that.
No, I know, but I'm sorry. My listeners, we have a lot of German-born American they live in America. They're Americans today. And I've had so much confirmation when I began talking about this, and I was sharing with our listeners as I was reading and learning. And I've talked to so many of them that have confirmed the truth about the lies that have been told. I just want that made plain. Let's take a call here. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, this is Storm from New York.
Hello, Storm.
Oh, hi, how you doing?
Yeah. Hi, Storm. We've spoken.
I would say more like totalitarian. Bush is a communist, really.
Yeah.
I mean, this world order has established a world communist order. That's
yes.
Really the idea.
Yes, it is, Storm.
Cooper. If you're saying Hitlerian. Yeah, Hitlerian tactics. Hitler didn't invent that, though. So he learned a lot of stuff also from the communists. And that's the thing with this guy. Also, the other thing I was going to think of, too, is the guy talking about 9-11. Did anybody ever see that film with 9-11 in plain sight, where there was some type of device or circle?
We were talking about that, the pod.
Yeah, right. Underneath the plane, that flash that you see explode before the plane hit the...
You might not have been... Did you just tune in, Storm?
Yeah, just now.
We already addressed that, honey. We already addressed that. And Steve, being aware of it, and I had been aware of it, I guess that film is more or less insinuating that it was the pod on the plane that brought the buildings down.
No, there was no, what I'm saying is a combination of things. Yeah, the pod underneath the plane that exploded probably to more or less cause more damage to the plane because to make that blow up. Because a plane hitting the building, most likely the whole plane may not necessarily blow up. And also the whole building certainly it's not enough to bring the building down. That's true.
Okay, thank you.
Either one. Also, when people running out in the lobby heard explosions underneath, so you have to do enough a combination of things to make this really a horrible catastrophe, like the one in Oklahoma City. And I do believe that Bush has something to do with this, and he did do this. That's not why you got Homeland Security.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Storm.
Okay.
Bye-bye, honey. The explosions, from what I have been reading, it is, Steve, correct me if I have not read it thoroughly enough, but it's been pretty well established that those buildings were brought down and the explosions that people were hearing were the detonations of the planted devices that actually imploded the building.
Oh, absolutely. And I've interviewed New York Fire Department Lieutenant Lou Caccioli, who was perhaps one of the most well-known people in the media after the event, because they talked about him in People magazine. And he confirmed to me that he definitely heard explosions prior to him escaping from the North Tower just before the collapse.
Wow.
And, of course, AFP and others have reported the molten steel in the basement of both of the Twin Towers, and there's no way in the world you're going to get a pool of melted steel in the basement of those towers from fires 1,400 feet
That's
higher.
That's right, and there's no way that only 2,700 people died there. We have to take a 60-second break here. And, folks, we will be back with Steve Martin after this. Please get your pen in your hand. And if you would like to see this broadcast continue, we need your help. We're down to 3 days a week, and we did that to hopefully be able to manage the airtime, the shortwave airtime bill. And it seems as though the 1 day per week less that we do is that much less that's coming in for the sponsorship donation. So we might not continue with this broadcast for much longer without your help. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Let me give you that address one more time, folks, just in case you missed it. And as I reminded you last night, you are listening, I believe, to the only listener-supported shortwave broadcast on the air, at least this type of broadcast. And in June, we will have completed 7 full years, if we make it till June, of listener-sponsored broadcasting. That speaks volumes in my mind and in my heart for the listeners of Sweet Liberty. The address is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. And our guest is Steve Martin. Steve lives in Maine, by the way, way up north, cold and snowy and et cetera. Not too much different than what we've been having this year, I guess. And we're talking about some new information and just an overview, I guess you would say, of the incident of 911. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, Jackie, this is Annette in West Virginia.
Hello, Annette.
If Mr. Martin will look at the November National Geographic, there is an article called World of Terror by Walter LeCure, and it shows a plane going to the World Trade Center. This is before the second building was brought down, and it looks like it does have a pod under it. It's something very obvious. If he would check that out to see if that is really so.
Thanks. Okay, Annette, thank you.
The other thing is, I thought when I heard Alex Jones talking about Berlin's interview with the mother of Michael Chirkin, not Michael,
Benjamin,
that the mother said, I hope I'm not wrong, but I thought the mother said that, yes, he has dinner at our house frequently.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Oh, so check that out, would you please? Because it was very late at night, and I just caught a portion of the program, and then I heard a portion of Alex Jones' program the next Monday night.
Thanks, Annette.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Steve?
Well...
What does that pod mean to you?
It doesn't mean anything to me, quite frankly. I just think it's a non-issue. I think it's a distraction. The buildings were brought down by explosives in the basement. The molten steel was seen by many eyewitnesses. We know from satellite imagery that the heat pools in those buildings were very, very hot for weeks, if not months, after the attack. And whether the plane had a pod on it that made the explosion a little bit bigger or not, to me, it's not important. It's a distraction.
And it seems like it's being featured as like, wow, look at we have discovered.
Yeah, and it's like, to me, I think they're going to use that to set us up.
Uh-huh.
But that isn't really what I wanted to talk about tonight.
You go right ahead, dear.
I just wanted to get briefly back to the story about Benjamin. She said something, the last caller you did, about having dinner. Now, Christopher Bolin, as far as I know, and I'll try to get with him personally tomorrow, was only told briefly by the mother the one statement, and that is that they are cousins.
Okay, we have a caller here. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just going to say the guy that owned that building, World Trade Center, was Jewish.
Yes. Thank you. Aaron and collected double insurance from it.
And ordered building number 7 to be pulled.
Yes, and ordered building number 7 to be pulled. Yep.
In fact, my first video shows very clearly the only clip that was ever given by a major network from the north side of Building 7 as it's collapsing, where Dan Rather is saying, here we bring you a clip of Building 7 collapsing, and you see the guy focusing on the bottom stories of that floor of that building, like he knew it was going to collapse bottom down first, whereas the other two towers collapsed top down first, and where you hear in the back someone saying the words, "Nice shot, police," and then repeated again softly, "Nice shot, police."
What does that mean?
I don't know. But then Dan Rather comes back on and says, "Oops, we need to re-rack this video because what we intended to show you was a clip of Building 7 coming down."
And what were they?
That was Building 7 coming down.
Wow.
Then from that point forward, you never see that clip again, but you get a clip from the south side where the building is much more obstructed, where you don't see the cameraman focusing in on the bottom floors first, and where you don't hear those words, "Nice shot, police," in the background. So that, you know, I mean, there's no question in my mind that Mr. Silverstein, you know, got his money back and then some out of this whole deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that one of Bush's relatives was head of, you know, involved in the security there is also very suspicious. And
yeah.
I mean, there's hundreds of things that we could go into, but I want to bring to your listeners' attention one other very important thing that happened today with regard to the 911 investigation. If I may.
Well, of course you may.
Okay.
You're our guest this evening.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Today on, many of your listeners probably watch CNN headline news occasionally. I have it on in the background just to see what the propaganda of the day is. And they had a Michael Toohey, spelled T-U-O-H-E-Y, on today, who was the ticket agent at the counter at the Portland, Maine jetport the morning of 9/11, and he checked the baggage of Mohammed Atta, supposedly, and his little sidekick, Abdulaziz Al-Omari. Now, on the CNN headline news report...
This is in Portland, Maine?
This is in Portland, Maine.
So we don't know if they ever wound up in Boston or not.
We don't know for a fact. But the official story says that these two guys, for whatever stupid reason, drove to Portland the night before in a rented car... And then they went out on the town Friday night. In fact, there's three different security cameras, one at an ATM machine, one at the Jetport gas station, and another at the Walmart in South Portland, where they were videotaped on camera, conveniently, the night before 9/11.
How convenient.
Yeah, to set, in my opinion, in my twisted conspiratorial mind, Jackie, to set a footprint, a trail, that these guys were indeed supposedly in Portland.
Do you want to hold your thought? Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, not to go on and on, but I want to say something very important that a lot of people have realized. On the day, a day before the actual incident of 9/11, there was an Israeli or Jewish, sometimes some called Beth Israel something, that had a long lease that was expensive rent, too, that they paid. And they had a lease that paid like 6 months or more after that date of 9/11. And they got out of there. Before the incident, and it was also something, it's not rumor either, there are people that validated, verified this, that there were some either Israeli Mossad or something that was, I think it was some Israeli organizations, trade groups or whatever, that renting either in that building, you know, as tenants, as a business or whatever, were told not to show up on that day. And there were some Jews that were told not to show up in that building on that day.
From my understanding, there wasn't one Jew killed in that thing that
no,
day.
No, that's incorrect.
Is that
correct? As a matter of fact, I got a picture of all the deaths of the people that did die.
Okay.
So, you know what, I'll let you go, but you know what pissed me off was there's an organization out there called the National Alliance something, and I had to go a little deep into them. But they act like one-to-one. I'm not saying the top people, person like William Pierce, he didn't say it, but somebody well below him made some comment about, well, it's good that it happened because of so-and-so with this and that with Jews and whatever. That guy was a stupid jerk because I have a photograph of a booklet, a huge booklet came on the news day, I won't go into it, that had a list of all the firemen and all the people that died in a building, and you know, and nobody gets to talk about the New York City.
I was going off a newspaper... an Israeli newspaper, Haaretz, I believe,
yeah,
that said they were so grateful that there were no Jews lost in the 911 bombing. Let's let Steve finish his thought here, honey.
Okay.
Thanks, Storm.
Well, two comments on that caller. First is that he's referring to Odigo Instant Messenger Service, which was located in the Twin Towers and did get a wet message from Israel that their workers were not to report to work that day. However, I did a very extensive and exhaustive cross-check with some help of some friends of the lists of people who were killed and or missing in the World Trade Center towers, and perhaps very close to 3% of the dead are very blatant Jewish last names. So I would like to squelch the rumor that there were no Jews killed that day.
Yeah, but now this, the report I read was from a Jewish newspaper.
Well, I understand that, but the Haaretz may not have known all the facts at that point in time. Now, what I'm telling you is these are actual lists that were released by the folks at Ground Zero, and they're the names you can get.
You know what?
That doesn't really.
That actual list released by people from Ground Zero, as far as I'm concerned, could be just as distorted as maybe
Yes, let me help you make that point, though. You would think that the percentage of Jews in the southern port of Manhattan would be much higher than the 3%.
Yeah.
I will grant you that much, and it should be at least 10%, I would think.
And maybe it is a fact.
And
maybe
we know Odigo did get that message to their employees.
Yeah,
so.
And maybe there were none. And maybe they were put on that list to squelch the information.
Possibly.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'll grant that.
So we'll be careful with the, quote, actual list. They're claiming 2,700 people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way that only 2,700 people were. Ralph Renee wrote a book and on 911, Fairy Tales and Lies or whatever, and he had photographs from some German news magazine or magazine that we never saw here. They're in his book. And in one frame alone, there were something like 7 or 8 people throwing themselves out of the building. He said that he sat and listened to some on-the-spot reporters, and you'd hear a splat.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said that was a person hitting the ground. And he said it was just chilling, because as these people were talking, you heard these splats every few seconds for the whole time they were going on.
Mm-hmm.
He, I believe, makes a very good case for the possibility. He's a member of Mensa. He's very, very brilliant and good with figures. But how many people would be able to be getting down those stairs, because they were told to stay put because they were safe, while the firemen were trying to fight their way up. And you had all those lower floors. I talked to one man who had a friend and said that there is no way that the trains that were down there ever got out. They had 2 or 3 or 4 levels beneath the World Trade Center. They were flooded. They were bombed. And so Renee guesses probably much closer to about 30,000. He may be off, but there is no way I can bring myself to believe that only 2,700 people died in that tragedy.
It does seem almost providential.
That's right. We're just what we do is we state their figures like it's a fact. And I'm going to be quiet now because you were talking about Mr. Tui, who was the baggage guy at Portland, Maine, who on news today, CNN headline news, said that he checked Muhammad Atta, was it?
That's correct.
And his sidekick, what was his name?
Abdulaziz Al-Alamari,
okay.
A-L-O-M-A-R-I.
Abdul Al-Alamari.
Right.
And that he checked them in at the airport. Okay.
That's correct.
You pick it up from there.
Okay. Well, the CNN piece was not, of course, conspiratorial whatsoever, and they kind of truncated what he had to say. But on CNN, he was making the point of how angry Muhammad Atta looked. But this caught me as kind of odd. And then half an hour, I went out to my mailbox, and I kid you not, I had a letter from someone who had bought one of my tapes years ago, and in it was a copy of the Maine Sunday Telegram for this past Sunday, which I do not subscribe to, and it's very hard to get way up here in northern Maine. And the article was all about Michael Tui and about his recollections of that day. And a couple of new things in the article. I mentioned just before your last caller that it was almost as though the FBI was setting a trail to prove, quote unquote, that these two men were in Portland the night before.
Like they did, like with Tim McVeigh.
Yes, exactly.
Asked directions two or three times.
Right.
On the way to the Murrah Federal Building that
right.
he was supposed to have bombed.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Now, what I did in the days after 9/11, I called Jane Eisenberg, who was the woman that the Portland Press Herald used as the eyewitness to put those two men on that little 19-seater down to Logan. And Jane told me that she could not positively identify those two as the same two men whose pictures were all over the news. So that was an obvious huge red flag that
mm-hmm.
something was odd, because here you're talking about two Arab gentlemen boarding at the very last second on a very tiny plane, and the person that the Portland Press Herald chose as their quote-unquote eyewitness is telling me she can't even identify them. And
yeah.
then, to make it even worse, I contacted the Jetport gas station back in October or November of 2001 and spoke to Jerry, who was the attendant who waited on these two men the night before 9/11, and he told me a couple of very interesting things. One is that he definitely, and I didn't even ask him, he just blurted it out on his own, that Al Omari could not be the same person, that he was way too tall to be the same guy.
Uh-huh.
He also told me that both of these gentlemen spoke such poor English that he had to repeat to them three times the direction to Walmart, which is where they went next and were on their video camera caught there. Now, every one of those video cameras, you know, we have stills that were put on the FBI website, and those still photos cannot be verified. They're blurry. They're too distant. You cannot prove from any of those that it's the same two men who the FBI put their mugshots in the list of 19 hijackers all over the major networks
mm-hmm.
for weeks. Now, coming back to Michael Toohey, in this past weekend's article, Toohey is quoted as saying he went home after his shift and was called back to the airport by the FBI to ask, they were going to ask him some questions about these two gentlemen. And the first question Toohey asked them was, well, why don't we just look on the security camera that's right above my head here at the check-in counter, because it'll have the audio and video feed for these two gentlemen. And the FBI told him that that camera was broken and had been out of service for some time. Now, here's a guy who works in that spot,
wow,
you know, day in and day out for years, and the FBI was able to come and tell him something about his video camera that he didn't know.
Wow.
Then, the next thing that was very, very suspicious is Michael Toohey makes the case that he was a little confused because the two men that showed up at the luggage counter both wore suit coats and ties, and Al Omari, in addition to those two items, also wore some sort of Arabic prayer shawl or something. Now, the famous picture of these two checking in upstairs at the Jetport, about 100 feet away from where Michael Toohey talked to them, as they're, you know, how you get to the airport, you have to put your carry-on baggage through the little conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a photo taken there that's been everywhere. It's the most famous photo of these two ever, probably. And here again, it's distant and grainy, and you can't tell for certain that it's the same two men. But the two men in that photo do not have a coat or a tie on, okay, and they do not have a prayer shawl or anything else on their head or neck. I'm staring at the picture right now and looking at it, and Atta has what looks like a small gym bag of some sort, and Al Omari has a tiny, tiny briefcase, like a little portfolio, leather portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking us to believe that these two guys who were very late for their flight, almost missed their flight, went into a restroom, took off their clothing, put it in the bags, and then got on board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michael, I called Michael this afternoon, Michael Toohey, and spoke to him for 45 minutes. He's a good guy. I think he's leaning towards our side on all these issues. And he also said he had a friend who went with them down to Boston, but the friend told him when they got to Boston and he noticed them getting off, they were both dressed in suit, coat, and ties. So, I asked you, did someone change the video stream and put two different guys that looked more like the Atta and Al Omari that the FBI wanted us to believe were getting on those planes? It's
wow.
just, it's an incredible coincidence, but I urge your readers to keep an eye on American Free Press. They're going to be doing a story on that, as well as probably some follow-ups reporting with regard to the two Chertoffs.
I had an article that quoted, I believe it was the head of the FBI at the time, And it wasn't too long afterwards. I don't know if it was a year or so afterwards or less, but he actually made a public statement that there was no evidence that linked any of the named hijackers to the act.
Hmm. Yeah, and that is still,
that?
That's still true. I do recall hearing
Yes.
And, of course, you know, I called the Middle East and spoke to Ziad Jarrah's father and uncle in Lebanon about 3 days after 9/11, and they both told me that he was still alive. The father insisted he spoke to him after 9/11.
Yeah, and one of them turned out to be an airline pilot.
Well, Ziad Jarrah was apparently training to be one.
Oh, okay.
And also, I tried to get a hold of Muhammad Atta's father in Cairo, Egypt, without success, but on the October 20th, on the ABC Morning Radio News at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, they reported once and only that Muhammad Atta's father in Cairo also said that he spoke to his son after 9/11 and that he was convinced that the Mossad or the CIA had captured him and put him in prison in order to blame 9/11 on him.
Uh-huh.
So Muhammad Atta is a key figure in this whole scenario, as it's been spoon-fed to us by the establishment media.
Mm-hmm.
And here Michael Toohey, now at the Portland Jetport, is raising additional suspicions as to whether Muhammad Atta ever even got on that flight to Logan.
And now, why do you think they're doing this? Why would the controlled news even let him do this? What's your thought on this?
Well, they're not letting Michael Toohey say anything. The CNN piece was fluff. It was nothing.
I see.
In fact, it was kind of funny. As I was speaking to Michael Toohey, Fox News was calling in. I mean, he's getting a lot of attention right now just because of this little 30-second blurb on CNN Headline News that they ran about 10 times today, just where he was expressing how angry Atta looked. But he also told me this afternoon, Toohey did, that the younger one, Olamari, was happy and bright, and he said there's no way that boy knew he was going to die that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said his personal opinion is that if there were hijackers at all, the hijackers got hijacked.
Meaning what?
Meaning that there probably was. My personal best guess, and it's only a guess, would be that the planes were remotely controlled.
Yes.
And I'm sure your listeners have all followed and heard that theory quite often.
Yeah, yeah. Right afterwards, as a matter of fact, Carol Valentine came out with an excellent piece. And there was the. Do you remember the so-called? I mean, this was famous, of course. The people who called their loved ones,
and then
it was proven by some professor
that you couldn't use cell phones at those altitudes.
The altitudes were too high, and then now we have a piece on our website in the section America's New War or War on Americans, where they recently, within the last few months, were celebrating because they believe that they have finally got a cell phone that'll be able to be used from an airplane.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, but what they're counting on is people losing their memories.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That we're not going to remember these things. And
well, those transcripts, those same transcripts, bogus or not, that we've received from the FAA, claim that Muhammad Atta and these other lead hijackers on the other four planes used perfect English to discuss what they were doing with the passengers from the cockpit. So here you have this Jerry at the Portland Gas telling me that these guys couldn't even speak English at all. And then you have Michael Toohey saying that Muhammad Atta's English was perfect at the counter. There's so much here that doesn't add up.
Right.
And all I'm saying with this whole thing is, folks, the story has not been written yet.
And Steve, I want to thank you for calling me and not bugging me, but not letting me let this go. I was asking you today, well, what purpose is it? You know, what is it? If we're going to talk about it, what good is it going to do? I appreciate very much the information that you've given us, and I believe that our listeners do too. And what it does is it reminds us and refreshes us on just a few of the, as you said, hundreds of lies that have been told about this.
Right.
And I'm glad you're sticking with it here. Are you going to be publishing a piece on this? Or?
Well, I'm going to assist the American Free Press on both of these stories
Good.
We talked about tonight, but I'm going to stay in the shadows as much as I can.
Okay.
I did want to get this one out on your show and your show only, though, because I feel that we've entered a new era here.
Uh-huh.
With the Popular Mechanics piece, I think the effort with Chertoff in place as the Department of Fatherland Security head, we've entered the next phase in demonizing the 911 truth movement.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I wanted all the other folks out there who were involved in this movement with me to be very careful and very accurate, and that includes Alex Jones, with what they say about 9/11, and to be very careful how they are presenting themselves, because they will use any small thing to discredit us. From this point forward, I think the pressure is going to be ratcheted up in all the major magazines and print media across this country and other forms of media as well, to demonize all of us and to use our mistakes
mm-hmm.
to maximum benefit.
And they might be one of the reasons why they're doing these little blurbs, is to keep the lie alive in
yeah.
the minds of
yes.
the masses who don't have the
excellent, Jackie, very perceptive. I think that's why they had
yeah.
this TUI on today, yes.
Uh-huh.
But and Michael's on our side, and AFP is going to do a story with him, so keep your eyes posted for that.
Well, you be careful of talking. Real quickly, I don't know if I asked you this before. Tim Timmerman, did you ever get it?
I never was able to get a hold of
Tim
Timmerman.
Well, do you Timmerman? Know that, investigative reporter Karen Lee Bixman actually interviewed him.
Oh,
and
early on or later?
Just not long after. Why, honey?
Well, because I was looking for him probably 3 months afterwards, trying
uh-huh.
to get back to him, and I never was able to find
I was
him.
Looking for him very very shortly afterwards, but I'm not an investigative reporter.
Mm.
And Tim Timmerman, folks, was somebody that was interviewed very early on, who was a pilot himself,
mm-hmm.
and said that the plane did not hit the Pentagon, that it landed on the heliport and exploded into flame. And he said he took pictures of it, and I was concerned for his life.
My recollection was that he was the fellow, too, who said that it was a small commuter-type plane.
I don't recall him.
He passed his office building, and he could literally see the faces of the people.
No, that wasn't him.
That wasn't him. That
no,
was another
because,
person.
Yeah, right, and we're out of our hour here. And I
well,
want to thank you. Thank you very much, Stephen. Ladies
God
and
bless.
Gentlemen, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. Please tune in. And please keep in touch, Lex, okay?
Will do.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Good night, folks. God bless you.
Roll away the dog.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Be sure to listen to the Church at Cahuilla every Saturday.